Well, Hong Kong's chief executive, Carrie Lam, is trying to hose down fears for the city's freedoms as China's ruling Communist Party prepares to impose a new national security law, bypassing Hong Kong's own legislature and likely breaching the letter of the agreement for Hong Kong's status. She's urged that people wait to see the law, and she asserts that Hong Kong's freedoms will be safe. But opponents say if the law looks anything like that, which already applies on the mainland, those freedoms are dead. Wilfred Chan is a freelance writer from Hong Kong who's currently in New York. He penned a poignant piece about his city's fate for the publication The Nation this week. He maintains the new law marks a declaration of total authority over Hong Kong and its people by Beijing. Wilfred Chan, thank you for speaking with us. Can you convey for us some sense of what you think Beijing's new security law plan means for Hong Kong?
It's still hard to tell exactly what they're planning to do, but what's certain is that this is a point of no return in terms of China declaring its total authority over Hong Kong and Hong Kong people. And what we know is that the Chinese version of the national security law makes it practically impossible to dissent against the central government, to really speak your mind on a lot of political issues without paying a pretty heavy price.
However, Beijing's top diplomat has been out and about talking to diplomats and others in the city and saying, look, this law is aimed only at terrorists and at sedition, and it's going to secure the sort of peaceful rights of law-abiding citizens. The first post-handover chief executive, Tung Chee Hwa, has echoed that view, that Hong Kong needs this law.
Right.
Why is that not true?
Well, there's two parts here. And the first thing is, if you look at the rhetoric that the Chinese government has been using against overwhelmingly peaceful protests and sort of distorting it and calling them separatist or sort of terrorist acts, right? You realize that when they say this, the scope of what they could be talking about could be a lot bigger than what you and I might imagine. Just an innocent demonstration asking for our basic rights, for investigation into police brutality, for the universal suffrage that China itself has promised Hong Kong, could be considered treasonous or seditious acts under the Chinese Communist Party's definition. But I think the second part is not just the content of the law, but really the way that they introduced it. And when you look at how they not only are saying that there's going to be no dissent, but they actually announced this law unilaterally and didn't give Hong Kong's own local government a chance to debate it or have it go through the legislature. That itself is the unambiguous message that China, you know, is laying down the line, and it's an expression of that authoritarian control.
What about the claim by Beijing that local and foreign businesses in Hong Kong have been concerned about the impact of the protests, which you say are overwhelmingly peaceful, but some say have been violent, and that's part of what China's saying. It's pointing to violence as a justification, but that there's a business implication here, that they need to restore stability for business reasons. Is that a legitimate claim?
I don't think so, because when you look at recent surveys, even amid the coronavirus pandemic, you have an overwhelming majority of the Hong Kong public supporting the protests. And this is after more than a year where you've seen, the peaceful protests and also protests that have been more confrontational. And despite this, the vast majority of Hong Kongers still agree that these five demands need to be met, still support the protesters. And the truth is, if Beijing or the Hong Kong government were truly committed to having a good climate for business or kind of making things go back to normal, they should have addressed these five demands, which are actually quite humble. They're not suggesting anything radical. There's certainly no demand for separatism or anything like they're claiming. So the state kind of has to look at why it's chosen to use a violent crackdown against the protesters whenever given the opportunity.
We also have the Hong Kong Bar Association saying that it can't see how Beijing has the power to add the national security law it proposes into Hong Kong's basic law. And it makes a very cogent sort of legal set of legal arguments about that. Do you think that case will have any impact on Beijing?
No, I don't think so, because Beijing knows full well that they're crossing all sorts of legal red lines, that they're contradicting all sorts of agreements that they themselves have agreed to, but who's going to stop them? So in the end, it's a power play, and it's effective. So it's very bleak right now.
Over the weekend after the national security law came to light, there was an outcry internationally. 198 parliamentarians from 23 countries issued a statement saying this is a flagrant breach of the Sino-British Joint Declaration. Has the international community got enough clout here to be able to get Beijing to change its mind?
No, I don't think so. And when you look at what the US has done, for example, which is to introduce the Hong Kong Human Rights and Democracy Act, the central threat of that act is to actually change the way the U.S. treats Hong Kong as an entity. That is to say, to no longer treat it as a special administrative region for the purposes of trade and finance and all these other things, but to treat it as part of China. And the reason why that was seen as a threat is because China depends on Hong Kong having this special status and being viewed this way in the eyes of the international community, because it depends on Hong Kong for, you know, like we said, trade and finance and all those other things. Now, what China has done with this national security law is essentially call the bluff of efforts like the Hong Kong Human Rights and Democracy Acts to say, you know what, we don't really care if you want to, you know, declare that Hong Kong is no longer a special place. If you want to just say that it's part of China, go ahead. You know, we'll find another way to do everything that Hong Kong was doing before. So the international community really doesn't have a lot of options here to really help Hong Kong, because China itself is saying that, you know, that leverage that you had doesn't apply anymore.
But there's an economic and financial reality here. Is China not killing the goose that lays the golden egg, to use that phrase, by right. going down this path?
Well, it is and it isn't. You know, you look at what it's what China's doing with the Belt and Road Initiative, how it's cultivating Shenzhen and Shanghai as alternative centers of capital and global trade. And you see that China is no longer the China of 1997 or, you know, 1984 when the initial agreement was signed. It has a lot of other options for accessing global markets and participating in, you know, the world economy. So Hong Kong may be a goose that lays golden eggs, but it's not the only goose anymore. And I think the Communist Party has made the calculation that it's more trouble than it's worth right now.
It's a very bleak picture that you and others paint about this moment. And you penned a poignant piece about Hong Kong for The Nation this week, an elegy to Hong Kong, really. What is your sense of this moment and what it means for Hong Kong and its citizens?
I think it's a extremely disorienting moment. And it's really heartbreaking because it's a place where people have tried to get democracy for decades now and initially felt so much hope, because even the top leaders in the Chinese Communist Party were signaling again and again that this is going to be something that's going to happen after the return from British rule. And you see that in the, you know, 3 or more decades since that point, that there have been more and more warning signs that that's no longer the way the CCP is thinking about things. Even the last big protest in Hong Kong, the Umbrella Movement, was a result of, you know, a failed attempt to try to get this pushed through via legal means. And so the fact that you even see protesters on the street reflects the failure of pretty much every single other attempt through respectable, legal, you know, political kind of negotiations to get what was promised to Hong Kongers from the start. And so, you know, no one wanted to be in this position. And I think you finally have to accept that we're never going to see, you know, that dream come true in a straightforward way. And so people really have to rethink what this means, you know, like what is Hong Kong even? What is our role in the world after this? And for people who for all their lives have held on to the dream that it could be something else, it's a really, really sad time.
Wilfred Chan, thank you so much for speaking with us today.
Thanks so much.
Hong Kong writer Wilfred Chan.